From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Hey, happy Thursday, ladies and gents. So glad you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your afternoon. Folks, as always, we've got a hot show in store for you all. Today, we'll be talking about Pete Carroll and the imminent backlash that he has been receiving now for the past 4 days. Also, Tom Izzo, of course, held his weekly presser. This afternoon, you'll get to hear from Tom himself as he addresses many areas concerning his ball club. Also, we'll give you our final thoughts on signing day, bringing you Throwback Thursday. And yes, we'll finally get to that Josh Gordon discussion, as well as give you a sneak peek preview into tonight's Current Sports TV episode. But we'll have all of that and so much more. But let's start the show like we always do, folks. Without further ado, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners, brought to you by the one, the only Chris Haller for this February 5th.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Chris Haller, and here are your Current Sport quick hit headliners for February 5th, 2015. The Michigan State women's basketball team will take on the Michigan Wolverines tonight at 7 p.m. It is National Girls and Women in Sports Day at the Breslin, and the Spartans look to avenge a 74-65 loss to the Wolverines earlier in the season. The Pistons lost on the road to the Indiana Pacers last night, 114-109. Andre Drummond recorded his 28th double-double of the season with 18 points and 18 rebounds. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope left the game early with a sore Achilles, and the team has listed him as day-to-day. Pistons still sit 2.5 games out of the final playoff spot. Steph Curry had a monster game last night, leading the Golden State Warriors back from a 22-point deficit to beat the Mavericks. Curry dropped 51, shooting 10 of 16 from behind the arc and over 60% from the field. The Warriors are currently first in the West with 3 games left before the All-Star break. The Red Wings travel to Denver to take on the Colorado Avalanche tonight. Puck drops at 7:30 p.m. The surging Wings have won 8 of its last 10 games and are only 2 points behind first-place Tampa Bay in the Atlantic Division. Sports Illustrated revealed its 2015 swimsuit cover Wednesday night on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. 24-year-old model Hannah Davis is this year's cover girl. It marks her third appearance in the issue. 2015 Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue launches online this Monday, February 9th, with the print edition on newsstands Tuesday, February 10th. A day after reports surfaced that MMA fighter Anderson Silva tested positive for steroids, Silva denied using performance-enhancing drugs. The fighter tested positive during a random out-of-competition test on January 9th. Silva released a statement through his manager. "I've been competing in this sport for a very long time," Silva said. "This is my 19th fight in the UFC. I have been thoroughly tested many times and have never had a positive test. I have not taken any performance-enhancing drugs. My stance on drugs is and will always be the same." Richard Sherman and girlfriend Ashley Moss welcomed their newborn baby into the world this morning. Interesting enough, Braden Sherman was born on 2/5/15. Richard's jersey number is 25. The happy father sent out a tweet this morning. "My son sure does know how to make an entrance. 2/5/15. Is it a coincidence or is he just that clever? Either way, I'm ecstatic." Those are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call at 517-355-9527.
Right, thanks a lot, Chris. Really appreciate that. Again, those are your Current Sports quick hit headliners, folks. Some intriguing ones, to say the least. Again, our phone lines are open. You just heard the number. I'm going to state it again for you. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Go ahead and call on in if there is anything on your sports noggin, if you want to weigh in on anything, to kind of give you a quick rundown on today's show. We've got a great one, folks. We'll be talking about Pete Carroll in just a second. Also diving into the Tom Izzo presser. And give you the takeaways from that presser as Michigan State, the men's basketball team, prepares for a big matchup against Illinois this Saturday, actually around noon. So we'll talk about that presser and bring you a few tidbits of information that Tom had to talk about. Also, we'll be talking about Josh Gordon, who has been suspended for a year. And this story has a lot of layers to it. A really interesting variances of opinions, I should say, across the board. And Josh Gordon himself has even decided to weigh in on his own problems in a pretty interesting way. So you'll get to hear that as well, folks. Also, got to remind you all that it is Thursday, and other than Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder, I know those two shows take over Thursdays now, but there's another hot show on TV, okay, folks? That being Current Sports TV, all right? At 10 p.m. tonight on your tube, you can watch my sit-down with David Thomas, who is the MSU Women's Basketball Director of Operations and Technology, as well as another special guest was also in the house, the assistant coach for the MSU Women's Basketball team, Amaka Agugwa. That's right. She joined me as well, so it was a dual interview. Those two are fantastic, folks. I got a chance to pick their brain on a lot of different things concerning their new roles with the team. Of course, Amaka is in her now second season as an assistant coach under the realm of Susie Merchant. And this is David Thomas's first year with the MSU women's basketball team. So they talk about their new roles. You also get their thoughts on recruiting, on the season that's been such an up and down roller coaster year for Susie and company. So you get their thoughts on that. And I tell you what, we're going to treat you guys who are tuned in right now. We're going to give you a sneak peek preview into that one-on-two interview, okay? So you do not want to miss that. Keep it locked right here to WKAR AM 870. So also, folks, tonight, the MSU women's basketball team actually will be in action at 7 p.m. Yes, it's always on like Donkey Kong anytime these two take the hardwood or any sport together. That's right, Michigan State takes on U of M tonight at 7 p.m. at the Breslin, and we're actually going to give away tickets to that game on today's show. So we're going to go with caller number one. If you want to win those tickets and take a trip to the Brez to enjoy that game, it's always a good time anytime the Spartans and Wolverines go at it, folks, no matter what the sport is. If you want to win those tickets, call in right now. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll be giving away those tickets, folks. All right, well, again, our phone lines are open. Before I start the show, this is some really shocking news I'm actually seeing on Twitter right here. Man, sad news when it comes to, I don't know if you guys know Whitney Houston. Of course, Whitney Houston, one of the greatest voices of all time, folks. A tremendous icon in the world of music, who sadly passed away a few years ago. But I'm sure many of you know, or I've been following this story concerning her daughter, Bobby Christina, who was found in an eerily similar way, the way Whitney Houston was found before she passed away, in a bathtub. I believe she overdosed on drug medication. And doctors have been working on her for quite a few days now. And it's being reported by various amounts of news outlets that the situation is getting very, very bleak. And even reading here from TMZ.com right now, they're saying that there's nothing more that doctors can do for Bobby Christina, and they've told her father, Bobby Brown, who's also a musical icon, that it's time to withdraw life support. Wow. Now, family sources tell TMZ that the decision is now in Bobby Brown's hands, and we are told that he is refusing to make the painful choice today because today is actually his birthday. Wow. Unbelievable stuff there, folks. That's riveting news. So thoughts and prayers out to out to that family because, man, oh, man, I mean, to especially for Bobby because, you know, he lost his wife not too long ago, and now his daughter's life is now hanging in the balance. I tell you what, folks, life is precious, man. Life is certainly precious. Live every day to the fullest, man. Wow. All right, folks. Well, let's move on now. I want to start today's show by getting something off of my sports noggin, off of my chest, okay? I tell you what, these past 4 days now, of course, Super Bowl Sunday was this past weekend, and of course, the Seattle Seahawks fell to the New England Patriots in one of the most riveting, eye-popping ways that we've seen in Super Bowl history. What an entertaining game, you know, and that's really for me. I mean, if the Cowboys or Lions aren't playing in the Super Bowl, I just want to see a good game. And that game on Sunday was not a good game. It was a legendary game, folks. One for the ages. One of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen. So if you guys remember, I mean, it came down to the final seconds. You guys know, but with 26 seconds remaining, Seattle, you know, and they, of course, they have beast mode, Marshawn Lynch, one of the best running backs. He'll go down as one of the best running backs in the history of the league. But Pete Carroll, head coach of Seattle, decided to make the decision to, you know, facing a second and goal, to throw the ball instead of giving it to Marshawn Lynch and letting him run it up the middle, possibly for a touchdown. Now, you know, that decision turned out to be not the right one because Russell Wilson ended up throwing an interception that, that of course, led to the demise and the loss, inevitable loss for the Seattle Seahawks winning that Super Bowl. Now, you know, it was really, I got to get this off my chest because I just think it's just been utterly ridiculous watching the media coverage and watching the backlash that Pete Carroll has been getting since that moment leading up to today. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a decision that he's going to have to definitely live with the rest of his life. I mean, anytime you make a mistake like that on the highest stage of the game in the Super Bowl, you are naturally going to get criticized. More so, especially from the fans of the team that you coach. Point blank, period. So I definitely get it from that perspective. But, I mean, every single day that I have turned on my radio. Now, of course, you know, with me being in the world of sports talk, I naturally listen to sports talk all the time in my car. And, of course, you know, being in the business of sports journalism, I'm constantly reading the paper. My ear is close to the sporting world. It has to be. This is what I do. There has not been a day that has gone by since Super Bowl Sunday where I've not turned on the radio or read an article concerning the decision for the Seattle Seahawks, that second and goal opportunity for them to win the game. There's not been one single day that has passed since the Super Bowl where I have heard or read about Pete Carroll just simply getting bashed by media members, by sports talk guys, by fans alike. I think it's reaching to a point now where it's becoming annoying for me. And I don't know if you guys can echo that out there. Maybe some of you guys think that he deserves the criticism. I personally do think he deserves it, but to a certain extent, folks. To a certain extent. I've heard comments left and right concerning Pete Carroll and questioning his ability as a head coach. I've heard fans call in on different shows calling for the head of Pete Carroll, possibly him getting fired. I'm sitting there like, are you kidding me? I mean, first off, have you looked at Pete Carroll's resume, folks? I mean, the man, if you forgot, he won a Super Bowl last year. He's won 2 conference championships, 4 division championships. He's had unheralded success as a college coach at USC. Pete Carroll knows what he's doing, folks. This is one of the best coaches in the game. And I think when his career is done, he will be a Hall of Famer. And it amazes me. It really amazes me how in the world of sports, if you make a mistake, because let's be honest here, the NFL is the most popular realm of sport in America. The NFL runs the world. I mean, you saw the TV ratings that were released on Monday morning about the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl this past Sunday was not only the most watched sporting event, but it was the most watched television show, period, in the history of television. It was unbelievable. The ratings were through the roof for this. So naturally, if you make a mistake on that type of stage, everyone sees it. Coupled with the fact that a lot of fans take the game so personal, in the Super Bowl, there are a lot of fans out there and a lot of just sports casual fans out there with money on the line. So they have automatically, anytime you got money on the line, you have a personal connection. So naturally, you're going to feel some type of way about a call like that. I get it. But there is a certain extent to where that displeasure hits for me. The attacks and the constant talks, I even saw yesterday, and, you know, Chris talked about, you know, the SI Swimsuit Edition, cover being released on Jimmy Fallon yesterday. I even saw on the commercial, I was watching that last night, I even saw on the commercial of the Jimmy Fallon show yesterday, a sit-down commercial pubbing a sit-down with Matt Lauer. Pete Carroll went as far as to sit down with Matt Lauer to sort of ease the minds of those and sort of to give people an account of what life has been like since Sunday. And I'm sitting there like, this has reached a ridiculous point. And I'm sitting there looking at it, you know, and I always say the what if factor. The what if factor is huge for me because every time I watch that play, I'm really more and more convinced that it was actually the execution that could have been better rather than the play call. I don't know. You got 26 seconds left. You got one timeout left. I just think that if they did, this is say they give it to Marshawn Lynch, he runs it, the clock still, and he doesn't get the touchdown, he runs it, doesn't get the touchdown, the clock has to run, Seahawks have to burn a timeout. So you're faced with the decision of running again. This is all hypothetical. So you're faced with the decision of running it again, possibly getting stopped, and the clock running out of time with no timeouts left, or possibly throwing the ball, it could be an incomplete pass and the clock stops automatically. So there are a lot of scenarios that could have been in play here. But let's say that Ricardo Lockett, you know, runs that quick slant behind Jermaine Kearse, who tried and failed to set that pick for him, which also led to the demise of that play for that interception. But let's be honest, Butler just made an incredible break on the ball and an incredible football play. Folks, if Ricardo Lockett and Russell Wilson puts that ball in the money for Ricardo to catch the ball, the storyline completely shifts here. The paradigm completely shifts here. And we won't be bashing Pete Carroll. Let's just say that, folks. The what-if factor is so big for me in situations like this. And again, we all make mistakes. Pete Carroll has owned up and said, yeah, I blew it. It's my fault. But again, I always sit back and say, how many mistakes do we make on our own jobs? You know, behind the scenes. Of course, we aren't the head coach of an NFL team. We have never coached in a Super Bowl. So the platform of where our mistakes can be viewed is on a significantly smaller level. But how many mistakes do we make on our jobs that don't get printed in the press, okay? That aren't warranted for public opinion. I always say that. So before you bash Pete Carroll, take a look at yourself. You know what I mean? Don't make it personal, folks. Don't make it personal. Because I feel as though people just kind of take sports way too personal nowadays. So I just had to get that off my chest. And honestly, I am tired of talking about it. I am. I'm tired of hearing about Pete Carroll doing interviews with Matt Lauer and turning on the radio and hearing about people still bashing Pete for the call. Can we move on now? Celebrate the win that is for the New England Patriots, and let's move on. And we're going to do that right now on Current Sports. All right, folks. Again, if you want to call in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to talk about Tom Izzo's presser now. Of course, Tom Izzo, he held his presser, his weekly presser, this afternoon down at the Breslin Center to address and sort of give us a preview of the matchup of Illinois. Again, that game will be this Saturday, this afternoon. This Saturday, the Spartans will be taking on Illinois. Now, he addressed a lot of different things. I want to start with Bryn Forbes, because he addressed Bryn Forbes when he was asked the question on whether or not Bryn Forbes should get more shots. This is what he had to say.
We're getting 58, 59 shots a game. That's a lot more than the 52, 53 that maybe we've gotten over the years, or what more the average of the league is. So we are getting enough shots up, partially because we're running better, partially because we're getting more offensive rebounds. And Bryn getting more shots, you know, helps us, but Bryn's got to get more shots. I mean, I think everybody thinks you can just manufacture ways to get them. Our fast break our wings are not running. So if our point guard pushes it and we could get more shots, if our wings would run, you know, defensively, if we were a little better, we'd get, you know, teams would miss more shots and you get more breaks. So, you know, this thought of just getting a guy more shots is going to solve all the problems is insane. Guys got to be, when you're playing at this level and when you're playing against a lot of good teams right now, maybe not as many great teams, but a lot of good teams. I mean, every night we go out, we're playing against somebody that can beat us. And which means they got good players. And usually the best players are the wing players. And so, you know, we're still saying that, Bryn, we got to get you more offense, but you got to run. You got to run your lane. You got to make sure you're getting out. You got to still get some rebounds. You got to guard. You got to do all these things. And that's tough for him. But we don't have the luxury of being able to have just an offensive player in there.
I think that was very well said by Tom Izzo. Now, you know, I tell you what, Bryn Forbes, when you look at these past few games, Bryn Forbes has been exceptionally well at hitting big shots when Michigan State needs a big shot. He's been a great situational shooter, without a doubt. And overall, Bryn Forbes has shown throughout this year that the man can certainly twickle the twine behind the arc. He's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, he's got a great shot on him, great form. And it's, again, this notion, you know, going back to what Tom Izzo said, the notion of getting Bryn more shots, would that solve Michigan State's offensive woes? Folks, it's going to take more than that. Again, Bryn Forbes, a lot of his shots have come, you know, especially that big one on the brink of overtime when Travis Trice, you know, penetrated and kicked out to him. That, you know, Bryn was given an opportunity because of the penetration. You know, the defense collapsed in. The, you know, Bryn's defender collapses in to stop the penetration for Trice. He kicks it out to Trice, kicks it out to Bryn, excuse me, and then Bryn is able to gather himself and knock down that three. Bryn has made big shots when Michigan State needs big shots. But as far as him creating his own shot, I'm not sure. I'm not too sold on that. And it's really interesting because Tom also went on to say that, you know, he needs to get Bryn to play that the way that he needs him to play to be successful at this level. Now, remember, Bryn Forbes, this is his first time being with the first season with the MSU men's basketball team. And, you know, the level of competition that he was playing at Cleveland State is not the competition that he is now experiencing as a Michigan State men's basketball player. Every night, Michigan State has a chance to lose a game. And every night they're facing some pretty good competition. Bryn Forbes has been great. Don't get me wrong, he's been great from behind the arc, but it's going to take more than getting him shots and getting him open for Michigan State to be successful in that offense. And also, you know, when it comes to the wings, getting out and running on fast breaks, Michigan State is by far at its highest level of success when they are getting out on the fast break and getting shots in transition. And, you know, I agree with Izzo. I mean, when you know, wings right now, what he's starting to see when going back and looking at the film is that his wings aren't running on fast breaks, which is not giving them an opportunity to get those easy buckets, whether it be from penetration or from shots that are, you know, wide open. So, interesting dynamic there. And I definitely have to totally agree with him there. You know, Bryn, I think, is a player who is certainly going to get better game by game by game. Tom Izzo talked about how, you know, this summer is going to be really a moment of progression for him because he wants to see him get bigger and stronger. And I think he will. But right now, the foundation and the ceiling for Bryn, I think, is pretty high. Also, I'm pretty sure many of you are wondering about the health of Javon Bess. Excuse me. Here's what Izzo had to say concerning the injury to Bess.
You know what? Javon isn't making a lot of progress, if I was to be honest with you. Making some, but he's not making a lot of progress. It's just been a very frustrating thing for him and a semi-very frustrating thing for me because I know what I want to do. I know what I think is going to help us.
Yeah, that's Tom on Javon Bess. Of course, Javon is still trying to get his feet wet after sitting out a little bit of the beginning of the season due to injury. So Javon right now is still, you know, and he's a guy that Tom Izzo was certainly high on. If you guys remember during media day, Tom Izzo really talked a lot about Best and how he believes that he can come in and be an impact player. But it hurts you when you are not 100% healthy. And Javon has shown flashes. I think he's a very athletic guy and can be. He's a guy who can take it inside and out as well. I just haven't seen enough of him from a health standpoint. I haven't seen him 100%, so it's hard for me to grade his play right now. Right now, his minutes are sporadic. You don't know if he's going to play a lot or a little. It all depends on right now who has it going for Michigan State. And, you know, I really liked how Tom Izzo also addressed Denzel Valentine and his improvements. Denzel Valentine is a guy that when he has it going, folks. Going back to the Michigan game, I mean, I don't know if Michigan State would have won that game if it wasn't for the play of Denzel Valentine, coupled with the fact that Costello certainly woke up in overtime. But, you know, that's another subject. But Denzel Valentine, I mean, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. So he was not only creating offense and, you know, and I think if anybody, when you talk about that having that go-to guy, Denzel Valentine has shown Shays that he can be that guy, because there were multiple plays throughout that game where the ball was in Denzel's hand and he just went. Whether it be through penetration, whether it be from a jump shot or a three-pointer, Denzel Valentine did a great job of having a balanced game because he was not only scoring, but also getting his teammates involved and creating quite the ruckus on the boards as well. Tom Izzo believes that he is improving defensively, and that is another thing that I wanted to see Denzel progress on, him and also Travis Trice. So that backcourt as a whole, when it comes to defending guards and stopping penetration and not allowing easy buckets in the paint. And, you know, Denzel is a workhorse. Tom Izzo does not have to worry about Denzel Valentine working on his game and trying to get better. He's just a gym rat, folks. And again, Denzel, you know, again, when he's playing within himself, man, sky's the limit for Denzel Valentine. Also, you know, the elephant in the room, free throws, free throws, free throws. Michigan State is the worst free throw shooting team in the conference. And Tom Izzo also addressed that.
Fundamentally, kids aren't working on him. I just talked to Travis Trice before I came down here, and so I was a little late, and I said, here's a kid who shot 82, 81 for his whole career, and is shooting 69. I said, you can control that. You know, it just takes the Tom Izzo 100 a day times 5, you know, 500 free throws a day, spend an extra half hour in here. You can control that, and that's what I'm trying to tell our guys. But they don't look at that as big things. I mean, you really don't, and they are big things, and especially guys that have done it well their whole life. Why nationwide they aren't, I just think it's because they're not brought up on it being an important part of the game. I mean, we spend time in practice. Practice, there's the one place I'll agree with Allen Iverson. It's not about practice with something like this. You got to get reps in on your own. You got to come in extra. You got to spend extra time. I just don't know if anybody spends enough time on things like that. Like Zell spends a ton of time on his shooting. But look, he's shooting 32% from the three. But it's not because he's not spent time on it. He's shooting 86 or 87% from the free throw line, and yet he missed a critical front end of a 1-on-1. You know, that happens too. But I would say in general, I don't think guys spend enough time working on their free throws in general.
Yeah, very well said as well, Tom. I think, you know, I kind of go back to my brief playing days in organized hoops back in high school. I remember when and actually, a lot of people don't know this. I mean, I used to love shooting free throws, man, because free throws, when I would shoot free throws before a game or, you know, but and I still do it today. I mean, if I'm playing a pickup game, I would take the line and shoot about 10 or so, because it just gets me in a rhythm of just shooting. And, you know, back in high school, I was the best free throw shooter on our team. But we struggled with free throws because of guys on our squad, just like Tom Izzo talked about, did not spend enough time on it. For free throws, for me, it's two things. It's how often you work on it, and also it's a focus thing, because how often do you see teams in crucial moments? And I think, you know, it's sometimes hard to watch in a game of basketball when there's like a minute left and it's a close game. It becomes a free throw shooting contest. And if you don't hit those free throws, those type of things can decide whether you lose a game or win a game. And I just don't think, and I agree with Tom, I just don't think enough emphasis is put on it, because a lot of people look at free throws like, okay, yeah, you're supposed to hit your free throws. They're gimmies. We'll hit them if need be. And I think that's kind of the mentality that Michigan State has adopted. They don't work on them enough. And in crucial moments, and again, looking back at that Michigan game, just think about it. Denzel Valentine goes to the line for that one-on-one. If he makes both of them, it becomes a four-point game, and Michigan State has a great chance to close it out in regulation and doesn't have to play an extra 5 minutes. It's the little things, folks. Those are little things that you just have to work on, and that's what it comes down to. And talk about controlling it, you know, Michigan State, I mean, free throws are the only time where no one's guarding you and you are at the line by yourself. You can control free throws and whether or not you hit those. Point blank, period. So that certainly has to improve because, again, it, as the season moves on and the stakes become higher in a season, that is when the little things come into play. And you got to take care of those. So, and also, the vibe that I got from Tom Izzo's press conference today is that this team still has a long way to go, folks. Because I listened to the entire presser today. And, you know, he talked a lot about players getting together and figuring things out. And he talked about players and the progression and the strides that they still have to make. Brent Forbes, you know, working out in the gym this summer, so on and so forth. The mood that I got from today's presser is that Tom still feels as though this team has a lot of ways to go, a long way to go. And as far as what implications his words today yield when it comes to postseason success, hey, we don't really know. It's still February. We still got a full month to play before March Madness hits. But I will say this. Michigan State has to start hitting the stride right now, sooner rather than later, folks. And again, they have a big matchup this Saturday against Illinois, a team that I do think Michigan State is better when comparing the two. Illinois is a team that's had kind of a rocky year, especially in conference play. So this could be a good opportunity for them at home to work on some things. So we will certainly see. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll also take your thoughts on recruiting. Of course, signing day, big day yesterday for the Spartans. And a lot of programs across the board. But I tell you what, Michigan State has another solid recruiting class coming in. As D'Antonio, of course, they started with yesterday's presser at 2:45, showing video of all of their signed recruits, and also D'Antonio kind of going down the list and yielding questions concerning his class. We actually have a caller right now that wants to talk about recruiting, our man Ray. How you doing, Ray? Welcome to Current Sports.
How you doing, my friend?
Fantastic, fantastic.
You know, I always used to keep up with recruiting like like it really meant a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys don't pan out. Five stars end up being two stars or three stars. You never know.
Right.
You can't gauge their heart. You can talk about their 40 time, lifting weights or whatever, but you can't gauge their heart.
Right. It's tough, man. You know, and everybody knows me. Recruiting is my least favorite subject in all of sports just because of that mere fact that you just stated, Ray. I mean, you see a lot of recruits who come in as two stars and, you know, pan out to be unbelievable. I mean, Le'Veon Bell and Trey Wayans and Darqueus Dennard, those are the three I've been bringing up a lot because those three were two-star recruits coming in. But, you know, you just never know with these kids sometimes, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I was watching some of it yesterday, a little bit, you know, half hour, hour, and I couldn't believe they had Michigan ranked number 14 out of 14 teams in the Big Ten, but then I seen another one that said they were number 6 in the Big Ten. I don't know what to believe, but it's shocking to me because all the years I kept track of Michigan when I liked them for 30, 40 years, they were always in the top five in recruiting. I know Jim Harbaugh only had 5 or 6 weeks, so you can't blame him for that. But I just wondered, where did Tom Lemming rank Michigan's class in the Big Ten?
I'm not sure. You know that, Alex? We have to Google that one. But looking across the board, though, from what I saw from U of M and the preseason the rankings, I should say, when it comes to their recruiting class. I mean, again, they weren't in the top 25 nationally anywhere. And that's real odd because Michigan has historically, like you just said, Ray, been a top 5 or a top 10 team when it comes to their recruiting rankings. And I think anytime you have such a down year, I always say perception is reality. And the perception of this team, which was certainly the reality, was that they weren't a great football team last year. They struggled. You know, you saw the controversy throughout the year when it came to Brady Hoke and, you know, the fans asking for him to get fired and so on and so forth. It didn't translate to the win column at all. And kids see that. When they're sitting at home, you know, it's all about what have you done for me lately. And Michigan has not lately been a great football team. So, naturally, that's going to hurt you in the recruiting spectrum because kids are sitting back watching that and saying, I don't know if I want to be a part of that program. Now, it will change and turn around because you have such a big name like Jim Harbaugh. I think he's going to come in and do a fabulous job. Once that translates to wins, you'll start to see things change, I think, Ray.
Well, yeah, it's 7 out of 8 years they've been really bad. But, you know, it's funny. I put it going through the channels yesterday, and the Chicago channel had Tom Lemming on there, and he was talking about how Michigan had the number one recruiting class until they fired Brady Hoke. And Brady Hoke was right there, and they wanted to know if Freddie Flintstone was going to the Notre Dame Irish.
Right.
And he said, no, I never did. They've never contacted me. I don't know where those rumors started. Wouldn't that have been ironic? He said that Notre Dame was scared of Michigan. Wouldn't that have been funny if he would have ended up on their staff?
Right, exactly. Yeah, we actually talked about that earlier this week and played that very bite. I believe it was yesterday we played that bite, and he kind of expunged the rumors. Yeah, but I don't know. I think Brady Hoke would definitely get another job in college football without a doubt. I just don't know if it's going to be a head coaching job, Ray. I can see him as an assistant coach somewhere.
Right, well, that's what they were talking about. They were talking about he was going to be an assistant head coach at Notre Dame. I didn't think Notre Dame would take him.
Right.
They got too winning of a tradition program to bring him in.
Right, exactly. And also, before we let you go, Ray, to answer your question about the top 25, no, he did not have Michigan in his top 25. Tom Lemming, that is.
Yeah, so, a lot of people are picking up 50th or 52nd overall in their class.
Right, exactly.
I was shocked that it went that bad for him. But, you know, you displaced two coaches in what, 4 or 5 years. It can be disruptive for a year at least.
Yeah, certainly,
and,
definitely.
You know, they got to play at Utah to open their season, so Harbaugh may have his hands full going down there.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Opening their new stadium down there, I guess September 4th. They said.
Right, exactly, and you know, it's mixed reviews, but I just don't think that you can realistically expect Jim and come in, you know, to come in his first year and make magic. If he does, hey. You know, that's just a testament to how great of a coach he is. But, again, this is going to take time for Jim to rebuild this thing. And he talked about it yesterday, how his recruiting, how his quarterback core, still has a long way to go to get to the level of play where they need to be legitimately competitive in conference and out of it as well. So,
well, you know, Brady Hoke, the first year he ever came in, he went 10-2. He got lucky in about 5 games. I didn't think they were going to win. They won in the last seconds. And then the next 2 years, everything went against them, you know.
Yeah, yes.
So, you know, you just never know. A lot of these games are so close, you know, one play can decide who's going to win or lose it.
That is true. Hey, Ray, thanks a lot for the call, my man.
All right, buddy.
All right, folks, again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll have a brief throwback Thursday for you. What exactly happened in this Thursday? February 5th in the world of sports. We'll also bring to you a sneak peek into current sports TV tonight. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, each and every Thursday, we love to turn back the clock. That's right, we dub it Throwback Thursday here on Current Sports. Well, we take a look at what happened on this Thursday in the world of sports. Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, time for Throwback Thursday, ladies and gents, where we take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. Well, today is February 5th. Hopefully you all are having a great February 5th. Let's take a look at what happened on this day in sports. All right, 1943, Mervyn Red Dutton was named the new NHL president. Frank Calder had died the day before. How sad is that? That's a depressing way to start Throwback Thursday. All right, let's add some light to this thing. All right, 1950, Dick Ervin of the Montreal Canadiens became the first NHL coach to win 500 games. He ended his career with 690 wins. How about that? All right, 1972, Bob Douglas became the first black man elected to the basketball Hall of Fame out in Springfield, Massachusetts. All right, the great Bob Douglas. Man, he was good. All right, 1977. Oh, you guys know this name. The great Sugar Ray Leonard won his first pro fight. He beat Luis Vega in 6 rounds. So I'm guessing that was a TKO. So how about that? Sugar Ray Leonard, one of the greatest to ever do it inside of the square ropes. All right, 1988, the first time in 30 years a wrestling match was aired in primetime. Andre the Giant beat Hulk Hogan in the match. How about that, man? I used to be a huge wrestling fanatic. Alex, did you ever watch wrestling back in the day, man, like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin? I mean, my goodness, he's shaking his head, yeah. Unbelievable times back in the day. I used to be a huge fanatic, man. So that was 1988, the first time in 30 years a wrestling match was aired. 1989, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar became the first NBA player to score 38,000 points. How about that, Kareem, the great Kareem? All right, 1990, NBC TV obtained the television rights to all of Notre Dame's home football games for the next 5 years. Notre Dame was the first school to set its games to a major network, a TV network. So there you go, setting a trend as well there. In 1997, Mario Lemieux of the Pittsburgh Penguins became the seventh player to score 600 career goals. Mario Lemieux, also one of the greatest to ever do it. I knew we have a Mike Tyson reference here on Throwback Thursday. It seems as though Thursdays always yield a Mike Tyson story somewhere. In 1999, Mike Tyson was sentenced to a year in jail for assaulting two people after a car accident on August 31st of 1998. Tyson was also fined $5,000 and had to serve 2 years of probation and had to perform 200 hours of community service upon release. Everyone knows that Mike certainly had his battles out of the ring as well. All right, in 2003, Bob Knight from Texas Tech coached his 800th victory. In 2006, the Pittsburgh Steelers defeated the Seattle Seahawks. Oh, how ironic is that, right? 21-10 in the Super Bowl. It was the fifth Super Bowl victory for the Steelers, and Jerome Bettis announced his retirement after the game. And I believe that Super Bowl was actually in Detroit, down at Ford Field. I remember watching that game at my uncle's condo downtown Detroit. We could actually see Ford Field as that game was taking place. And yeah, you know, kind of a local tie, Jerome Bettis being from Detroit, winning that Super Bowl. And Jerome actually will be gracing the NFL Hall of Fame. That was announced last week as well. So congrats to the great Jerome Bettis. Well, that wraps up Throwback Thursday for you folks. Man, that was a stacked one. If you got any thoughts on that, 517-355-9527. Let's start our second break. When we come back, folks, you will get a sneak peek preview into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down. It's a one-on-two sit-down with David Thomas and Amaka Agugwa of the MSU women's basketball team. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I hope you guys are having a fantastic Thursday. Man, the weekend is almost here. Weekend is almost here. One more day, folks. One more day after today. But you know what? Thursday night is the night for Current Sports TV. That's right. Each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m., you guys get to see me do my thing away from behind the mic and on your television screens. And you know what? We always have a fantastic guest each and every week. And this week was no exception to that. I got a chance to pick the brains of David Thomas and Amaka Agugwa. Now, they call her Coach Mox for short. Now, Coach Mox and DT, they, of course, are part of the MSU women's basketball team. David Thomas is actually in his first year as the director of MSU women's basketball operations and technology. And Amaka is actually in her second year under the helm of Susie Merchant, the head coach of that team. So she's in her second year as being an assistant coach. So they are two fantastic individuals. And I tell you what, this has certainly been a rocky season for MSU women's basketball. They are 11-11 right now, sitting at 500 overall, 3-6 in the Big Ten Conference. And I tell you what, Susie Merchant has certainly been going through it emotionally, trying to figure out how this team can be successful. So right now, we're going to give you a sneak peek into that one-on-two interview. And I had to start by asking them, just how exactly is Susie Merchant holding up?
Susie's doing well. You know, Susie's a fighter, and that's kind of what she instills in our players. She's just staying optimistic about the season because it's not like we're getting blown out by teams. And, you know, Maryland was a little bit of a different story, but we're right there in the fight given all the adversity we've faced this year. And she knows that this season can still turn around.
Certainly. What about for you, DT?
Same thing. I mean, she kind of said on a radio show this week that, you know, our team is a team of fighters. And you look at some of the games we've been in, whether it be Notre Dame, we beat Georgia Tech, Baylor. We had a great first half against Baylor. We beat Syracuse. We have the ability to do it. We just are lacking the bodies. And right. For her, it's very difficult. She's never been in this sort of position before. And so it's brand new for her, too. But I think she's handling it extremely well.
As you guys, in sort of a, I guess you can say, a perspective is having her back and having, you know, confiding in her. What do you guys say to her in moments like this as, you know, working with her? I mean, to try to keep that demeanor up. Do you guys say anything to her or just kind of just let her be in moments like
well,
this?
I'll speak for myself. I feel like I have a pretty good relationship with Susie, and I just try to, you know, stay positive and just point out some of the good things that we're doing and some of the good things we can do against the upcoming teams. You know, you don't really want to be negative in a situation like this because, you know, attitude is a big part of what your success. So just trying to stay positive and keep her, on a positive note with just what we're doing right and what we can do right moving forward.
Now, your guys' relationship with her, of course, David, I mean, you are in your first year as a director of operations and technology with the squad. Amaka, you are now in your second year with Susie. What's it like working with Susie, and what have you guys learned from her?
For me, just the work ethic. I had an opportunity to play with coaches over a number of years.
Right.
And I see the same sort of attributes in Susie as I did in Coach Izzo in terms of his work ethic. He's the first one there, last one to leave. He's, you know, watching film constantly, always on the road. The time he puts into his craft and her craft is amazing. So that's probably be the number one thing. I've only been there 6 months. Mox has been there a little longer than I have, but knowing Susie prior to getting this position, I had heard that about her and now am able to admire it firsthand.
What about you, Mox?
I would agree with what DT said. I think, you know, how much time she puts in towards watching film and player development is really extraordinary. I mean, a lot of head coaches, Coach Izzo's another one that does that, but a lot of head coaches probably don't watch quite as much film as she does. I mean, she'll stay up throughout the night. She doesn't sleep.
Wow.
And she watches it. She just wants to make sure she has a good handle on our team and where we need to get better as far as, like, self-scouts, but then also the scout on the opposing team. And she demands a lot from our players, mental toughness, physical toughness. She prepares them in every way we need to prepare them for a game, you know. And I think just her preparation, game preparation, practice preparation, I really learned a lot from her in that area.
Now, of course, a goal for any college basketball team, no matter what it is to make the NCAA tourney.
Of course.
That's the big goal, the big picture here. There are a lot of people out there, you know, listeners of current sports radio and people I've interacted with when talking about the team that will place this team on the bubble right now. What is it going to take for you guys to make the tourney?
Well, you know, when we have been successful this season in particular, we play together. You know, on offense, we move the ball. We have each other's back, and we've shown that throughout the year. We showed it pretty consistently in the non-conference, and then in the conference, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. But we've addressed that with our players, and we think that everybody's kind of ready to get on the same page. And if we do that, we feel like we can finish strong in the second part of this Big Ten season. And if we do that, I mean, anything's possible. You know, rolling in, if we get these wins rolling into the Big Ten tournament, then, you know, anything's possible. And we think we can still make some noise.
Yeah, certainly. I'll tell you what, and something you can guarantee when watching you guys play is that Ariel Powers is going to bring it. I mean, she seems to throw up double-digit numbers. I mean, she's like among the nation's leaders in double-doubles. And then Tori Jankowska also, both sophomores, they're out there. They're such scoring talents. I mean, what is it like to see their maturation game to game to game, and what makes them so special? DT?
What makes them so special is that the drive and the hunger to do well and play at their best every game. They're, as you can see, they're always prepared for battle. And they prepare themselves with the help of the coaching staff for every game. And when they get out, when that ball's tipped, you know they're going to light it up. Torrey, especially this year on her defense end, that she doesn't get as much credit for. Last year, you know, I wasn't here, but her defense wasn't nearly as good as it is this year. But now she's locking down the best players on the opposing team. So that's something else to her game that she's developed this year. So hats off for her for all her hard work in the offseason to get to this point. But yeah, it's just so fun being able to witness it from the sidelines, see these two young ladies put all that effort into playing and playing so well.
Now, Coach Mox, for you, I mean, you get to work with them firsthand in practice. I mean, what is that like?
I mean, it's amazing. Both of them, they really bring it to another level. I mean, the competitive nature in both those kids is just through the roof. I mean, in practice and in games. I mean, you'll see them getting excited in practice for somebody just making a layup or diving on the floor, and, you know, Ariel will be jumping out of her skin like, yes, you know, she's so energetic. She wants her teammates to do well. Same with Torrey. But in the game, I mean, they just want to win, and they want to will their team to win and try and do whatever they can. And that's why you see their stat lines. I mean, Ariel, she's been consistent pretty much 20 and 12 all year, you know.
Yeah.
But she's had some really extraordinary games and also became, you know, the single season double-double leader at MSU 2 games ago. She's had 19 double-doubles this season. The previous record was 17. So
And the season's not over yet.
The season's not over, and she's only a sophomore. But you see both of them that they fill the stat sheet. You know, their lines are always amazing at the end of the game. I mean, the one game they had 28 and 11, both of them, you know, six assists, that kind of thing. So I just love coaching them. They're great kids, along with everybody else, too.
Right. Yeah. All right. You got to fill in that, right? Yeah. Definitely. All right, I want to shift gears now for you guys. I mean, both of you are sort of embarking now into new roles, ideally. I want to start with you first, David. You know, with your role as Director of Operations and Technology, for all of those who don't know what that means, can you kind of explain what your role is with the team now, with this being your first season in that role?
Absolutely. Basically, I do everything but coach in terms of logistics. So, I help plan our travel, our airfare, our bus trips, our hotel stays, per diem, meals. I organize all that, all the while overseeing our budget. And it's a pretty big budget to oversee. Camps, I run the camps, organize, run the camps, do marketing, advertising, I work with our marketing team to promote those. Game day stuff, organize a lot of teams that come and visit, come to a game.
Right.
So I'll have, you know, any given game, 10 teams that want to come watch our girls play. And so some of those teams, I'll give them a tour of the facility, like a lot of that kind of stuff. So a lot of logistical stuff is what I do. I get to sit on the bench on road games, which is fun.
Nice. That's always great.
But it's a lot of logistics and planning and
it sounds like a lot, DT. Does that kind of, I mean, at some point, do you pull your hair out? Oh. I mean, hotels and planning events? I mean, it sounds like pretty intricate stuff.
And these girls eat a lot.
I mean, they eat a lot?
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
They eat all the time. So that's, you know, Mox and I, when I first got the job, she's like, I would never want to be a adobo because, I never want to be a adobo because I don't want to plan all those meals.
Right,
like,
yeah.
They just eat constantly. But
so on a typical day, I mean, how much are they eating, DT, to put it in perspective?
I don't want to put that out there.
Okay, we won't go there. All right, Coach Mox, I mean, you're in your second year now with Susie and company as assistant coach. Can you talk about your role to get to Michigan State?
Before I got here?
Right.
I got right into coaching right after college. I had some career-ending injuries. Really wanted to go keep playing. My doctors wouldn't sign off, so I got right into coaching. I did my graduate assistant work at VCU.
Okay.
And from there, I was there for about 3-4 years, went to Indiana University, so I was familiar with the Big Ten. And then from there to Old Dominion. And so I knew Coach Merchant a little bit from when I was in the Big Ten at Indiana. And the relationship kind of started building from there. But when she called me and talked to me about this job, I mean, to me, it was a no-brainer. I mean, Michigan State, one of the best programs in the country and one of the best athletic departments in the country, you know, so I was just super excited about it. And you know, I had some experience coming in, so I think she was pretty confident in what I could bring to the table. So I'm loving it.
Now, you also have a lot of experience on the recruiting trail as well, going out and scouting different players and whatnot. I mean, what is that like? I mean, to sort of give us a firsthand account into the world of recruiting for a coach, what are the travel hours like? We kind of talked about it briefly before we hit the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's not anything that's really set in stone. I mean, one week you may be gone one day, the next week you may be gone 4 days. You know, and along with meeting up with the team to be at games and, you know, doing some film work on the road. For us, Coach Nikkel, she does probably the most travel right now because she's our recruiting coordinator.
Right.
So she has a little bit more of a hectic travel schedule as far as recruiting, but the grind is still making phone calls, you know, calling and texting these kids and coaches and parents and brothers and sisters and guidance counselors. Wow. And all these people, you know, just to get in with the kid and really show them some love, because if you're not doing it, then other schools are. So the travel's hard, but the whole recruiting grind altogether.
Now, I want to, DT, get your thoughts on recruiting in general. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not a big fan of recruiting. I actually hate recruiting, and that's a strong word. I hate it. It's a really big grind. You never know what sort of mindset some of these young kids have, because, you know, they can change their mind in the drop of a dime for various reasons. Both of you guys, I'm sure, were highly recruited coming out of high school. DT, for you, out in Canada, I mean, you were a very good basketball player during your time. What was it like being great at your sport, and what was it like talking to different colleges and sort of deciding where you wanted to go for school? What was it like back then for you?
For me, the biggest thing was growing up in Canada, where all we really played was hockey at the time. Mind you, nowadays we have a lot of players going to the NBA and going to the college, but mm-hmm. for me, we didn't get much NCAA basketball on TV. The only time we ever got it was during the tournament, right? So,
right. So
it was, for me, it was just all about, I just need to get an education. I want to try to get an education, and my education paid for.
Right.
So the whole process was just a blur, to be honest. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't grow up thinking this is what I wanted to do. It just kind of fell upon me my senior year, basically, was when I started really to get recruited. Took my four visits, my fourth being here at Michigan State. Didn't want to take my fifth after I came here. I knew this was the place. So
what sold you on Michigan State?
One, geography, it was close to home.
Right.
My family could get back and forth. The class we had coming in, I came in with A.J. Granger, Mateen Cleaves, Ken Miller. It was a great class. We had Mo Pete still here and mm-hmm. Antonio Smith. I mean, I just could tell that there was a foundation that had been laid and we were gonna do some great things, which we did. And then just Coach Izzo and the way he took me in from Canada, like a father, he's almost from Canada himself, but
right.
as a father figure, and I, you know, to this day still look up to him.
Certainly. So overall, do you like what recruiting has transformed into now?
Well, it's all, you know, I've been totally removed from the game, college level anyways, for 15 years now. And mm-hmm. just interacting with the coaches now, knowing that, you know, we are now looking at eighth graders, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
it seems to get younger and younger every year.
It's insane.
Oh, yeah, we have 2020s on our list, 21s.
Wow. Yeah. So, Coach Mox, you're on the recruiting trail looking at kids that young?
That young.
Wow. Yeah, folks, younger and younger each and every year. I actually saw a recruiting tape, get this, from a 10-year-old yesterday. Oh, boy, I tell you what, recruiting. Gotta love it or gotta hate it. Depends on who you talk to. All right, folks. Again, that was a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV. Sit down with David Thomas and Amaka Ogugwa of the MSU women's basketball team. Catch it tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Well, we are out of time, ladies and gents, but you have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic Thursday. And as always, be easy, people.